Super Gamecast 64, episode 101, and guess what? It's that season 4 premiere!
We're back, baby!
Hey, today on the show...
We had a nice long break.
Yeah.
We're energized.
We're back. Back in the booth. Today on the show, guys, we're doing a little bit of news. We've got some AGDQ drama, the ESRB fumbling it again, all the new games we played, and more on this fresh start to a new season of Super Gamecast 64.
We're turning over a new leaf, a new cartridge.
Animal Crossing, a new... Hey, yo, DJ, hit that! It feels good to be back, Kevin.
It feels good to be back, Matt.
It feels John Goodman. Before we get into the meat of the show, I'm your host, Matt. With me, as always, we have...
It is me. It is Kevin. I am back. I'm here.
Tyler, bit busy today, but we will hopefully
see
him.
Doing adult stuff.
Yeah, lots of adult stuff. Tax season, as you all know. So if you guys haven't done your taxes and you're old enough to or have to, you should be doing those. Hopefully we'll catch him on episode 102.
What else? I think daylight savings time's coming up. Don't forget to change the batteries in your fire smoke alarm detector. You know, the fire machine that's in your house.
Unless you work at a factory that makes smoke machines.
Right.
Then, well, you should probably still have your stuff up to code.
Do you think, like, places that test smoke machines have fire alarms in them?
What do you think the capacity for somebody, like the fire marshal, you know, you go into a bar and it's like, hey, you can only have 25 people in here. And then there's like 60 girls up on the bar as is.
$18.99.
Exactly. How many people do you think the fire marshals allow to have in those buildings they use for firemen training? You know how they have those, they set them on fire on purpose.
Yeah, you lost me, man. Wait, they set the people on fire?
No.
Oh, okay.
The
I thought that's what you meant by firemen.
Nope. Guys, this is a video game podcast. It's also a comedy show. If you don't laugh, you're a sociopath. We have so many things to talk about. We were gone for a few months, so a little bit of this is catch up. A little of this is brand new. No mustard. But let's get deep into it.
But you're going to relish the topics we have for you.
Damn it. I told you. We can't have puns all throughout season 4.
No Kevin, hot dog jokes?
Kevin's just been... As soon as we started, he's like, hey, how many puns do you think we could realistically fit into a whole entire season?
You know, all I asked was a PPE, a puns per episode.
I told him maybe like 4 or 5.
15.
Speaking of things that aren't going to do much of a change... I don't even know where I was going with that transition. You guys know about the recent troubles. Let's call them transgressions that the game industry has been having regarding loot boxes, microtransactions, etc., etc.
You mean gambling, Matt?
Yes. We talked about this with Star Wars Battlefront 2 on episode 100 when we went over the best games of 2017. We talked about this in many ways over the course of the year. A bunch of different games having loot boxes. Some good. Overwatch is not that bad. Some completely terrible. Star Wars Battlefront 2. but the one thing that came out of all of this was some pushback from both senators, legislators around the country. I don't know, Kevin, if you saw some of the stuff that was being implemented. We saw some Hawaii, and I think... I know Hawaii, and I don't want to say any other states. Maybe Florida. We're pushing for almost wide bans on games that had loot boxes.
What I'd like to see is banning the loot boxes themselves, not necessarily the games, but you got to start somewhere.
I think as a game industry, we don't need to have loot boxes. The idea of a loot box, you know, we've talked about this before. Forza Horizon 3 has a similar system in which, you get a wheel spin, but it costs no money. You know, it's not a paid per thing. It's just something you get. And even though it's a wheel and not a loot box, it's still a randomized bonus that you get. I'm okay with that. I just don't like the idea of paying real money for... I think everything we're going to say has been tread over at this
Honestly,
point.
Honestly, I'm even okay with progression-based rewards that are randomized because it... I'm going to sound like EA here, but it does give you a sense of progression.
Yeah, no, I mean, it does.
Like, there's nothing more fun than, you know, realistically scratching that gambling itch when it comes to loot boxes. But if it's something that's built into the game, that's a mechanic of it, that makes you want to play more, I don't see a problem with it.
The funniest thing I think of is that when I worked at GameStop and stuff, there was so many PS2 games that were like, you know, Pool Hustlers and gambling this and gambling. That's why those games don't exist nowadays, because they'd all be real gambling, and that's what they are. But anyways, when all the loot box stuff was happening, especially with Star Wars Battlefront 2, because it was so high profile, you saw a lot of parents getting into the discussion, and when they saw how close loot boxes were to gambling, like I said, a lot of pushback. The last thing the game industry wants, especially now with this political climate, is to have any federal... what's the word I'm looking for? We don't want the federal government touching the video games.
Right.
So the whole reason the ESRB was founded is when they did the violence in video games thing with Mortal Kombat. The federal
everything old is new again.
Yeah, the federal government was basically like, hey, do this yourselves or we're going to do it for you, and you don't want the federal government dealing with video games. So the ESRB received a strongly worded letter from a senator that said basically the same thing, but in order with loot boxes. They said, hey, fix this or we're going to fix it for you.
Signed, thoughts and prayers, John McCain.
Exactly. Well, it wasn't John McCain. But what this did is it made the ESRB act. And like most things the ESRB does, it was half-baked. So here's how they've decided to approach the idea of letting parents and the general public know whether or not there is loot boxes and stuff like that. Kevin.
Yes.
You know how you go on the Apple iTunes store or the Google store or whatever, and you go to buy Angry Birds?
Sure.
And it's like, hey, it's free.
Yep.
But then there's a little thing that says in-game purchases, right?
Yes, sir.
So what the ESRB has decided to do is not distinguish a game's loot boxes or DLC or, you know, XP modifiers. The point that they're making or what they're doing is any game, and yes, it is as blanket as I'm going to say, any game that has something additional you can purchase, right? Destiny 2, the DLC, the loot boxes in that, anything that you can buy post-release, the retail box will now have a small label on it, different from the rating label, that says contains in-game purchases.
That's their solution?
It's a catch-all. And the thing is it's, I see what they're going for, but then they had some text behind it saying things like, quote, parents don't really know that much about loot boxes and don't want to be overwhelmed with too much information.
Oh, God.
The old parents don't get it, so we're just going to give them less information.
You see, parents are dum-dums. They don't know how gambling works.
Exactly. And the funniest thing is that, like I just said, almost every game has some sort of in-game purchase at this point.
Yeah.
Try to think of any game in the past 5 years that came out in a box on retail shelf stores and didn't have either a DLC, a season pass, or something. You know? It just doesn't exist.
Correct.
So the ESRB essentially just said, all video game boxes will now say in-game purchases on them. And the funniest thing, too, I think it was Jeff Gerstmann who made this observation on the Giant Bombcast. If you wanted to be skeezy, since the ESRB isn't a law enforcement, you know, they can't really do anything quite about it besides revoke your rating. If you wanted to, think of retail versus digital, and think of how box art is manufactured and distributed. It's by shipping. So say I make Call of Duty 6, and we say there's no content for the game, no DLC, no nothing. That might piss off fans. No loot boxes, whatever. They release the game. The box does not have that sticker. 2 days later, they say, hey, we're adding all this stuff in. Boxes already print. What are you going to do? Ship. At that point, you have boxes that say one thing, you have boxes that say another thing. The digital store might say it, but there's ways to game the system. And at the end of the day, it doesn't do anything to fix the problem. The problem needs to just get rid of all the loot boxes. The ESRB is like, we'll just tell parents that you can buy things in video games. We know that.
What it comes down to is it's a reactionary measure rather than a proactive measure.
It truly was reactionary. In the when they announced this and said that this is what they were doing, there was text that kind of harkened back or at least addressed that initial, not threat, but a letter they got from the senator saying, like, this, we think what we're doing will address those issues therein.
Because I guarantee you, and you can mark this, episode 101, Super Gamecast 64, Kevin said, if a large enough consortium of people spearheaded an effort to avoid or at least reduce the amount of loot box-based rewards, real money transactions in games, those games would slowly gain a better pedigree than other games. Gamers would, they would value those games more, and so they would gain a better fall. Like, it's just simple, you know, like...
Making a good game.
It's simple supply and command.
You see things like this happening where it's almost like this mixed market. We had Konami just release Metal Gear Survive, and if you want an extra save slot, it's like $10. Right? And that would maybe fly for a game like, let's say, Fortnite. Fortnite's free to play if you're doing Battle Royale. They have their season pass thing, and that's like $10.
Yep.
Metal Gear Survive is a $40 buy-in, and then they're asking you for additional things. It's this mix between...
And it's not even that great of a game.
It's really not that good of a game. It's exactly what we thought Konami was going to do. But I digress. Nothing is being reached here. In the political climate, we have Donald Trump saying things like, we're going to approach the video game industry and see what we can do about these violent video games. There's so much that they're trying to stick onto different medias, just like they tried to do way back in the day. And this is the last... We don't need federal government coming in at this point. We never needed them to come in, but even now. So to see the ESRB just kind of haphazardly throw something out the window, say, here's what we're going to do, it seems like you said, they're just putting the problem in stasis. They're not really getting rid of it or even moving it forward or back.
It would basically be like making an Olympic judge a health inspector. It's like, yeah, they're used to giving things like ratings based on criteria,
yeah,
but they don't have the real life context or experience with the product to really make an informed decision.
And then on top of that analogy, it would be like the Olympics saying, well, we had this health inspector rate it because the audience really doesn't know that much about the sport.
Right.
They just want to see the number.
Right.
Anyways, yeah, that's your first 10 minutes. That's some actually hard-hitting news. We don't do that much on this show.
Welcome back, baby.
But we'll get to the goofs eventually. Before we get to the goofs, I have another news story here. Kevin didn't see it, I don't think. I think Kotaku just put out a story. Bubbles Del Fuego is a very popular speedrunner. He's been doing it for a very long time. Over 8 years. He was a speedrunner who got into the whole speedrunning community.
He said was. I think I know where this is going.
Well, he is. No, no. He is a speedrunner who got into the community about 8 years ago. He saw the Awesome Games Done Quick Marathon way back in like 2013, 2012. And he saw that other gamers were doing speedruns, because not that long ago, speedrunning wasn't a huge thing that it is today. AGDQ specifically has really pushed that community forward into the mainstream eye. But Bubbles Del Fuego has been there the entire time. And more importantly, he has gone through a battle with cancer himself. And that is what Awesome Games Done Quick, their winter event, goes to benefit. So naturally, being a speedrunner and being a cancer survivor, he wanted to, you know, help out. He wanted to go to AGDQ, he wanted to run games, he wanted to help raise money so other people could maybe survive their battle and live healthy lives. And he's been doing this for years and years, and Bubbles Del Fuego is always one of my favorite people to watch. Then we had the last AGDQ, which people were actually very, very happy with. Comparatively to other years, people said it was an enjoyable show. I thought it was great. I covered almost the entirety of the show for a90skid.com. If you want to go check out that stuff, you can. But then we heard about Bubbles Del Fuego getting banned. Lifetime ban from AGDQ. The thing about this is it's a little bit of a gray area. The reason he got banned is because Bubbles Del Fuego, for his pain post-cancer recovery, uses medical marijuana in the form of edibles. And, I mean, that's all that's listed. But he uses it. He got a hotel nearby AGDQ. It was like a B&B or some sort of thing, you know. And there, he, took his medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, there was another runner or a friend of his who had anxiety. Mm-hmm. And so he gave him a marijuana edible.
Sure.
To chill him out. 2 hours later, the kid has a bad reaction to it, goes into a panic attack, someone calls 911. These things happen.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just speaking factually, if you ever get into a bad place with a marijuana edible, you sit, it can't hurt you.
Right.
That's the one thing about it. But people have anxiety attacks. You don't know. So someone called 911, and eventually it got out that Bubbles Del Fuego had provided this kid with his own medication. And it's that weird thing of technically he's giving another person prescribed medication.
Sure.
But the way that medical marijuana is in the U.S. is so, it's state-based. It's really all over the place.
It's one quagmire of rules.
It's one big gray area. And The thing that's kind of weird about this specifically was that AGDQ, the people who put it on, heard about it and just automatically banned Bubbles Del Fuego. Lifetime. Never allowed to return. Somebody who has not only helped them raise thousands upon thousands of dollars with his runs, a cancer survivor himself who is using the medication. That's where you get into this, like, he probably shouldn't have given it to his friend.
Sure.
But even at that point, he didn't give it to him on AGDQ grounds. I'm pretty sure this whole entire thing didn't happen at the hotel. He was just attending the event. He didn't consume any of it on their property. Mm-hmm. He consumed it on his own thing.
Well, the kid took it himself.
Yes.
Not to borrow language from a more serious topic, but he consented to taking the medicine, obviously. It's not like this kid forced it on him.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, what it comes down to is he gave him his prescription medicine.
Yeah.
Morally, ethically, that's a no-brainer. But I don't think they needed to go to the lengths that they needed to, that they did, you know, in order to punish him.
The flip side of it is that if all of this happened and there was a good back and forth and mm-hmm. GDQ explained this situation and why they felt, even though it wasn't on their premises, had nothing to do with their event,
right,
that they needed to ban him. But what happened is they just sent him an email or said, hey, you're banned for life. And then he said, can I explain myself? And sent them, they didn't, nope, don't care.
Jeez.
So you're banned for life. And that's the kind of thing that people are consistently pissed off about AGDQ is they take these small things, you know, somebody saying fuck on screen by accident, someone making too many Owen Wilson jokes, and then they ban them. Runners.
That's the hill they choose to die on.
Yeah. And the thing that's crazy is a lot of these runners, the people who are raising a lot of good money for the mm-hmm. Prevent Cancer Foundation. And it's just sad to see them be so obtuse time and time
mm-hmm.
again.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but think that big or smaller marathons like the European Speedrunners Assembly are going to become bigger and bigger as AGDQ continues to make somewhat of a fool of themselves. If I was at AGDQ, regardless of my own convictions, I could see doing a ban because he gave him prescription medicine
sure.
and the kid had, you know, a bad reaction. That is something that could be punished, especially when you're supposed to be going on screen in front
yeah.
of tons of people.
Yeah.
But you have to have some sort of dialogue. Otherwise, you're just treating your performers like some kind of, you don't pay these people.
Well, because it's such a legal gray area, and it varies, like you said, state to state. A lot of times these people are making up these rules on the fly. So I really doubt that AGDQ had a pre-existing bylaw that stated something along the lines of, if you give someone, I mean, okay, I understand. If you take illegal drugs and you show up on screen, well, yeah, they're going to can your ass. That goes anywhere. Any professional situation, if you do drugs or you drink on the job, you're going to get canned.
And I don't want to get too much into this because we're already 15-ish minutes in. But the thing is that one year they had Summer Games done quick. I believe it was 2 years ago. They had it in Denver, Colorado. And it was right after recreational marijuana went. Half those motherfuckers were stoned.
Yeah.
They were blasted. And
it went in Rome.
And I think it's almost like a reaction to that.
Yeah.
Because everything after, I cannot think of one time where a runner was speedrunning a game and I thought that he was messed up in any way, except for at AGDQ, they did the Toy Story run, and one of the guys on the couch was obviously drunk. But he was drunk in a fun way. But I can't remember. So it seems like they've really family-friendlied it up, which is okay.
Sure.
But if you're going to have volunteers
It's a little hypocritical. It seems prudish.
Yes. And so he has come out. He has said things about it. There's a 20-minute Twitch video he did where he talks about everything. So if you want, look it up. But the reason I mainly bring it up is because not only is Bubbles Del Fuego a runner who has been in the community for a long time, he's also a cancer survivor. He put in a lot of hours for these people. And then he gets banned without having any sort of say in it. He made a mistake. I'm not, like we said, you don't give marijuana, especially if it's medical marijuana, to somebody who doesn't have it prescribed or doesn't, you know, especially an edible. People can react badly to these kind of things. It's good to know what you're getting into. But unfortunately, Bubbles Del Fuego is banned from Awesome Games Done Quick and Summer Games Done Quick indefinitely. But I highly recommend you check out his Twitch stream and stuff like that. It seems just like every year, less and less of the runners I know are appearing at these places, and they're appearing at other places. So we'll see how it goes, but I thought I would update you guys with that. So after this first 20 minutes of kind of like bummish news,
yeah,
sorry for the downers, guys, but we are not just a comedy show.
Yeah.
We're also a video game show.
Well, yeah.
And we've been away for a while, so, but a little bit of a lighthearted thing, Kevin. We're gonna push away from those hard-hitting news stories and bring you something a little bit more lighthearted.
Everybody's favorite anxiety-reducing game.
A little dewy.
Everybody's favorite farming sim. And
Animal Crossing 4.
awkward relationship having sim. Stardew Valley.
Yeah, Kevin's. This was Kevin's 2016 game of the year.
It's my 2016 game of the year. Still my indie darling. Probably one of the best indie games I've ever played. I'll continue to sing its praises until it gets milkshake ducked. But
they're having a bit of an update, huh?
Yeah, yeah. The multiplayer update's out of it's going into beta. The development is done. There's a lot of other assets that they're adding to the game to increase the playability of it, the replayability of it in some cases.
Yeah.
They're also leaking very slight hints at their next game, which I mentioned previously, is going to be a magic school themed game.
Oh, so okay.
Like you can go off to like a Hogwarts sort of thing.
I was going to say, yeah.
And learn magic, and the information they released was that you'll be going to classes, you'll be brewing potions, you'll be learning elemental magic to fight creatures in the forest.
Oh man, this is my jam.
You'll be developing awkward relationships with your co-students.
Yeah, Hermione, it's really weird. What do you care about gnomes that much?
It's panning out to be conceptually
house elves
really good.
Yeah.
But onto this multiplayer thing. The important part is the multiplayer. Yeah.
So this is PC, Switch, Xbox?
As far as I know, it'll be limited to console to console. It's going to be released on PC first, I believe.
It's important to note for people who maybe not have heard of this game. Like Kevin said, it's a farming sim. It's a lot more than that, but it was solo. It was always a solo game,
yes.
And now they're implementing co-op, which very much changes the way that the game would probably be played, or at least how you'll experience it with somebody else.
The heart of the game, too, is will lend itself greatly to that format. I can't tell you how many times I've been playing that game and I thought it'd be really great to have somebody playing this with me or like, you know.
I feel like any game that has some sort of inherent downtime or inherent kind of chore-ish stuff to it, like gotta water my plants, it would always be nice to just have somebody else there, you know?
Right.
Like,
hey, it's, buddy. It's already such a relaxing and zen experience. It might be really fun to share that with somebody special to you, whether it's a significant other or a family member. And the way this game plays, it doesn't require a whole lot of twitchy reaction. So it's really great for people who don't really play a ton of games. And the controller inputs on PC are flawless. So, I mean, it realistically, it's something that could be a really great introduction to somebody who doesn't play games. And furthermore, with a multiplayer setting, that lends itself to teaching them. Actively.
And it's also good that we have a game that, like I said, this was your indie and overall game of the year 2016.
Yep.
We are now in the beginning of 2018, and they're making changes to this game that are fundamental. We're not talking about, hey, we added four new plants for you to grow. It's like, you have co-op. That's a big thing. So, especially with Chucklefish, right? They made this. That's a developer who will consistently be giving you new updates and stuff. So always good to remember that stuff when they do it because, hey, you got to reward developers for sticking with their fan base.
And honestly, it's a really great process altogether. It's something that I'd really like to see. We're seeing it in things like Dead Cells, a couple other indie games where their developers are being super transparent about the process and the progress that they're making.
Yeah.
And it fosters a trust in your fans, and that's why Stardew has such a voracious following.
Well, hey, they're small enough that they can be on that intimate level, but they're knowledgeable enough to produce for a mass audience, which I think is why Stardew continuously is a game we bring up. But that is pretty much what we had for news.
Mm-hmm.
We've been playing a lot of games.
We have been, yeah.
For anybody who might be new to the show, I probably should have said this at the top, but obviously we're a bit of a banter cast, but the way we do things is that we usually start the show off with a little bit of news, if we do some pre-banter. We'll talk about the games that we've been playing, and then towards the end of the show, we get a little bit more goofy, maybe talk about some older things or some more fun things, but just so you guys can follow along and understand what's going on, we're now going to go into the segment of the show where we talk about each individual game that we've played, or at least the ones that we think are interesting enough to bring up. There are quite a few. And one of these on the list was one that both Kevin and Tyler were incredibly excited for. Came out late or mid-January.
Yep.
I reviewed it for 90skid.com. They dragged me into it. And Kevin, what's the name of the game?
This is Monster Hunter World, man.
Monster Hunter World.
I know life to this game.
This is the console. Finally, they've released a console version of Monster Hunter, a franchise that was long just on handhelds and like maybe you get a Wii port or something if you were lucky, 3DSs. But what they've done is they've really taken Monster Hunter and removed some of the more difficult parts of it that might have blocked new players, added a lot of quality of life things. I think if we get into it, we could talk about Monster Hunter here for another hour.
But easily, yeah.
I don't think this is... I think we have enough time, and we will be bringing up this game in Game of the Year 2018.
We'll slowly talk about it over a span of episodes, I imagine, so we don't
need
sure to go...
I'm sure Tyler's going to want to have something to say about it,
right,
too.
Right, right.
But I thought a nice way would kind of just be a small introduction to the game, because I think there's still new players who are...
I know somebody personally who bought it last week, so I mean, there's...
And Monster Hunter, another thing that's very, very important to note is that if you're interested in the series, buckle up because you're going to get more. Capcom put this game out and they developed it. Capcom has made a lot of games. Street Fighter, you know? Any game from like the 16-bit era that you really liked was probably Capcom.
Yeah.
Anyways, this is their fastest selling game ever. And that kind of rings true for just how popular this thing is. And for their first attempt, there's things they can improve upon, but you'll be seeing more Monster Hunter World. For those who are unaware, you run around different areas, you fight monsters. It kind of has this almost Bloodborne, Dark Souls kind of... I don't want to say that.
A lot of people like to compare it to Dark Souls.
More of what I'm trying to get at is that it's not hack and slash. You know your weapon, you know the combos you're doing, and you're hitting with intent. You're not like, oh, I'm going to hit this guy 20 times. It's, do I hit him 3 times and then back away, or hit him 4 times and potentially take a hit?
It's almost like monster boxing, but you have 15 different weapons you can choose from.
Mm-hmm.
You have to...
Well, you can hold one at a time, but you can go... Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You learn the fights, you learn the monsters, you plan and prepare, you craft materials that will aid you in your hunting.
Get some potions, get some
new
armor.
And all the while, you're on these hugely cinematic hunts that you have to track this monster, and they added a really great new mechanic that doesn't always work, it doesn't always land, but I really like it conceptually based on what it used to be, and I'll explain that in a moment.
Talk about the
fireflies. They added the scout flies, which are these little fireflies that you carry on a little capsule on your character, and once you find, say, a footprint or a some suspicious scrapes on the ground or some mucus from a monster, they will get the monster's scent and track it for you, and so you follow a trail of these ethereal little fireflies as they guide you to your ultimate goal.
Think of it like any sort of kind of, like you said, an ethereal waypoint. You follow the green light of the fireflies, and they will lead you towards the next place you want
to
go.
Now, what they used to do in Monster Hunter is they would require you to use an item called a Psycho Serum, which was a craftable item. It was kind of difficult to get the materials for it, and what it would do is it would show you exactly where the monster is on the map.
Yeah.
Or if you had an armor skill that allowed you to track the monster instantly, it would also do that. Aside from that, you would have to find the monster by dumb luck or playing enough to know where it sleeps,
mm-hmm.
and then you'd have to use a paintball on it to mark it, basically.
Generally speaking, all of the things that took maybe 5 or 6 steps before
mm-hmm.
now take 1. So
yes.
these things, changes that some veterans may not like, but generally speaking, the overall consensus is that it makes it easier to learn.
Yes.
That being said, Monster Hunter still has a learning curve.
Mm-hmm.
I reviewed this game. It took me 80 hours to make it through the, quote, main quest. You know, there is kind of end game content. You can keep leveling up your character, find new monsters, etc. It took me about 80 hours, but I'll be honest with you, if I didn't have Kevin and Tyler and Josh kind of leading me along, I would have not known half the things I was doing. There really is some kind of inherent tinkering you have to do with the game systems.
There's a huge info dump up front, but it's one of the most rewarding games I've ever played.
To that point, like we said earlier, you have 15 different weapons you can choose from. I went with longsword, which is apparently the easiest to learn in this game. At least they have some sort of weird ranking system based on how difficult the weapon might be for newcomers. So I chose the easiest because it was my first Monster Hunter game fully. Kevin, what did you go with?
I kind of bounced between charge blade, insect glaive, and bow and arrow.
Just so you understand how diverse these weapons are. For me, with a longsword, I had a vertical slash. Mm-hmm. And then once I hit enough of those vertical slashes, I could do these powerful horizontal slashes. And if I did enough of those, I could do a big stabby, jump in the air, and do a big kind of like bring my sword up in the air and right down on the monster. Jump 20 feet in the air. There's some other combos in there. But I was always up in the boss's face.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's how I would fight. Find the monster, get up in his face, hit mm-hmm. him with a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin, when you're using an insect glaive, how do you fight the monsters?
So each of the weapons kind of follows a classic weapon example in terms of the archetype that it represents. So just to give you an idea, the long swords are typically katanas or like, you know, long glaive-like weapons.
You have a great sword in there, which is like a big buster sword.
So the insect glaive is like a pole arm. It's like a bladed spear, essentially. And you also have what's called a kinsect, which is a small bug attached to your arm that you send at the monster. And depending on where it hits the monster, it gathers a specific serum. Once you gather three of those particular serums, they're three different colors, you gain a buff. And so each of those serums provides a different boon for your character to aid you in your fighting. But the style is more aerial. So you can use the glaive to launch yourself into the air and attack the monster from above. You can use it to do these big sweeping strikes or these slight stabs, and it's much more varied than the other weapons.
Generally speaking, the reason I bring up the juxtaposition between something as simple as the longsword and something as hard, well, not hard to use, but something as skill-based as the insect glaive is it's really a game that lets you play kind of how you want to play. You know, all the mechanics are still, the difficulty's still there, but someone playing with a longsword is going to have a vastly different experience for someone playing with a ranged weapon.
Mm-hmm.
And even to that point, someone using a bow have a way different experience than someone using a gun.
Yep.
Or they have machine guns, you know, stuff like that. There's characters that have, or there's guns, or I should say weapons, that do nothing but buff the team.
Mm-hmm.
This game can be played completely solo. You can play it online with people. The one thing I'll say is that playing online, if you're thinking you're going in, you're going to play the whole game through with one friend, kind of leave that thought in the dust, because there's some really weird restrictions on how online works. But I would be lying if I said that this game is an excellent game to play with friends.
I do want to point something out about the online with friends sort of thing.
Yeah.
I really, 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 really like how Capcom handled this. I think a lot of people are criticizing it, but if you think about it objectively, it makes a lot of sense. So let's say I beat this story mode already, and you were just picking this game up, and I wanted to help you. Well, you would start a hunt, and I would not be able to join you until you saw all the requisite cutscenes that need to occur before that hunt actually progresses.
Yeah, meaning, so generally in a mission, you start off, they're like, hey, here's where the monster is. You maybe see a cutscene, you track the monster. Once you find the monster, they give you a cutscene, and then, hey, now you're fighting this monster. It's also very important to note that these fights in Monster Hunter can take upwards of 30 to 40 minutes.
Yeah.
These aren't 10-minute fights. Once you find the monster, that's the main, you know, chunk of the game there.
Yep.
So, like as Kevin was saying, he's beaten the game. He's seen all the cutscenes. I just started. Kevin cannot join my game until I have watched all the cutscenes.
Right. Which is nice because it makes the individual savor the game a little bit more.
Yeah.
They didn't really have as many cutscenes because I don't think the other games focused as much on the cinematic details. But, I mean, that aside, this game is beautiful.
There's some really good set pieces
there's,
in it.
You know, it's like lush forests and arid deserts and just really great, really great scenes.
I was very impressed with what they were doing for the engine being one of those framework engines they use for older Capcom games. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an engine that they've used before for Dead Rising and stuff like that. But the things they were able to do with it and the ways, it's such a colorful game too.
Yeah.
You go to these different areas. One might be an ancient forest. One might be like this very crystallized area. Very different environmental effects. And to that point, new enemies, new things you're going to collect. Generally speaking, this game is a lot. And just trying to explain it right now is making my head spin.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We probably sound like rambling idiots. But,
exactly. But for those who play Monster Hunter,
you get it.
You are listening going, uh-huh. Yeah.
I do have to admit, too, another thing that really makes this game great. I'm sure, obviously, there are outliers. So, you know, if you hear this and you think, that Kevin, he's an idiot.
Yeah.
The community is fantastic. The Reddit community is nothing but helpful. You know, there's this friendly rivalry between the different weapons. You know, you'll always see threads break out in, oh, I'm a sword and shield user, and that's the best weapon, and, you know. But it's all friendly. You know, it's all good banter.
And the point, too, to that is that all the weapons are insanely well-balanced. You know, there's a few that might be a little bit more OP than others, mm-hmm. but in order to be overpowered, you have to be good.
Yep.
It's a skill-based game. It's a game that I've seen a lot of people who I would never see them playing this kind of game. Just getting into it purely based on the idea that you're hunting giant monsters. And I think that sell, that you're going to start out and you're going to be a guy who's just going to go hunt these big, huge Dragonite monsters, these towering mammoths, these water beasts.
And then use their parts to make weapons and armor.
The last thing I want to say about this before we talk about our next game is that the sense of progression. We brought this up earlier. That you can have a sense of progression in games by giving you new gear, new content, better weapons, etc., etc. What this game did for me, Monster Hunter World, is it really made me feel that natural progression. When I started this game, like many people, you'll see that first monster and you'll go, oh my god, that thing is insane, right? And then fast forward 70 hours, you're fighting a monster not only seven times as big as the first monster, but infinitely more difficult, yet you have grown in power. You are more comfortable with your gear. You may not have gotten like anything that's plus 20 skill boost. You get little things here and there, but what this game gives you is a good progression of natural skill.
Mm-hmm.
By the time you reach the end, you can go back to one of those early bosses and cheese through it like cake, and yep. Not just because you have, you know, better weapons or better gear, but because you just become better. You become a better swordsman, a better bowman.
And I'm sure if you're familiar enough with the game or the title itself, like this, the franchise or the title itself, you could probably identify some, but I really think that there's not a whole lot of power creep, which is kind of nice. The game scales with your commensurate level of skill, and your skill level, it scales with the commensurate level of gear that you can equip, and you know, there's always new challenges.
I just think it's very excellent. This game can be both played solo, online. There's a plethora of other side things. Like, one of our favorite things to do is the arena, where you go in and you just fight this monster in a literal kind of like, you know, Roman arena, but you get preset kind of weapons. You know, you're not using what you have crafted over your course of the game, but hey, why don't you use this bow and these random armor sets we put together? So it's a good way to experience the game in a bunch of different variety of ways. Monster Hunter World is a great time, and if you haven't played it yet, don't worry about it. You haven't really missed anything. I know a lot of people are like, oh, the game came out 3 months ago. I feel like there's enough.
Oh, yeah.
You will pick it up if you're interested in it.
And there's so many people that are still, like, jumping on the bandwagon, so you will not be alone.
Yeah, and I would even say that maybe now is a better time to get into it, just in case you're one of those people who does not... You get to a hard boss, and you don't want to take the sixth try. You would rather just have four friends come and destroy it, you know?
Right.
That is more of a possibility now, because there's a lot of people who are high rank. But Monster Hunter World, great start to the year. We had this discussion in 2017, episode 100, whether or not Monster Hunter World would be a talk in Game of the Year 2018, or if we would just forget it because it was an early January title. And I think this will have the legs, and we will talk about it towards the end of the year. Of course, we'll talk about it more as we move through the episodes. This next game, it is made by the Behemoth. They made games such as Castle Crashers, Alien Hominid, etc. It's called Pit People. Pit People. It was a game that was in early access. I played it at the beginning, actually early January of 2017.
Mm-hmm.
They have gone through and updated the game six times with this last week. I believe it was, last week, maybe Monday, they released the official game. It has come out of early access. It is a full game. You can buy it, I believe it's $20 or $30, Xbox and PC only. But what this game is a strategy game where it's more of a suggestion. You have the same art style that Behemoth is known for. It's kind of hard to really say. It's a cutesy, weird, kind of acid trip animation.
Like hand-drawn almost looking.
Yeah, they really don't take themselves seriously.
Comic book style.
Let me give you...
You know, like...
In this game, you play as Horatio, the blueberry farmer. In the time on Earth when the giant space bear has attacked the Earth... you have these band of child eaters who come to take your child, but the giant monster bear lifts him up into space. So Horatio, the blueberry farmer, must team up with Pipistrella, the daughter of the queen, to roam the many lands and save the land from... It's silly.
It's goofy as hell.
Like, the third mission...
It's goofy Fire Emblem.
Yes. That's what I'm saying. You have a strategy game, right? You move your characters. You might have a tank, you know, a ranged guy, a guy with sword and shield.
A unicorn that shoots its horn.
Exactly. You move them to where you want to move them. And in another role-playing game or another strategy game, you would be like, okay, defend, attack, whatever. What Pit People does is it says, hey, take your character and move them. And then they will decide what they do from there. It's a passive strategic game. Strategy is still there, but it's a little bit more casual. The most important thing is that if you have a fight going on, you can isolate the last enemy, and then instead of killing them, you can capture them and then add them to your party. So there's always this kind of rotating party of new characters. You get tons of custom things, so you can deck them out in silly helmets and cool weapons. You know, you start off with like a normal sword, and now my guy uses a giant screwdriver. And his shield, which was once just like this little buckler, is now a rendition of the Mona Lisa. So, and he has this big hat that makes him look like a shark, right? So that's like, it's very silly, it's tongue-in-cheek, but what I want to say is that
the narration's fantastic.
Yeah, Stamper, he does the narration. If you ever play Battle Block Theater, that's another guy. But it's very silly. It's over the top. Without spoiling anything, like the third mission, or like one of the third main missions, you're talking to, maybe it's a side mission, you're talking to this guy, and he's like, I'll give you what you want, but you have to go into this retirement home of old cupcakes and kill them all in 10 turns. And the cupcakes don't fight you. They just try to run away. And so you and a friend, if you want, because this game is fully playable in co-op, just massacre these old cupcakes. And the cupcakes in this world are the healers. And the guy, like, halfway through is like, oh, wow, you're really doing it. Okay. And me and my buddy Mike were playing this, and I'm like, all right, I'm going to corner these three cupcakes. And we're just smashing them with our dudes. I'm like, I feel horrible. But then you get a quadra kill on, like, literally elderly cupcakes. It's just the weirdest thing and the silliest thing.
The funny thing about the cupcakes, too, and this is just something I want to highlight, just to kind of call to attention the absurdity of the game, is that you said the cupcakes are healers. What you didn't mention is that they heal by literally scooping their own cupcake, like
frosting out of their heads
and flinging it at your own guys.
That's actually,
and so they lose health by giving you health.
And when you originally find the cupcake, because he's one of the ones you get early on in the story, he is trapped in this little cage, and then the knights that are using him are, you could just see in the cutscene, they walk by and they just use their finger and scoop out a thing of icing and, like, you know, put it in their mouth, mwah, and he's like just sitting there very sad. But they're just, and once you get the cupcake, you might unlock sprinkles, and then you can add sprinkles on top of them. It's a silly game, but the thing I wanted to say is that it's a game that came out early 2017 in early access. 1 year later, they have delivered a full product. It has over 100 quests, like 26 different areas you can go into, because there is this overworld kind of thing, a bunch of different side missions, over, I think, 1,200 different collectibles. There's online multiplayer, there's online co-op, there's an insane mode that gives you permadeath. So those who are fans of XCOM, this game might not give you that kind of control, but it's got that kind of stuff. I would say definitely check out Pit People if you're a fan of Behemoth's previous works. The only thing that I'll say is, single player, it feels like how it should. In co-op, it feels like maybe the fights are a little bit more padded. They add extra people, and just the general nature of how everything is passive. I was sitting there with Mike, and I was like, hey, this quest feels like it's a little bit long in the tooth. And some of the quests are mainly made for one player, which can make things either way better or way worse. Maybe we'll do a video on it eventually. But Pit People, check it out if you're a strategy fan and maybe looking for something a little bit more aloof, a little silly, a lot of silly, very colorful, but a little bit more passive. Kevin?
Yes.
We talked about this game. Speaking of early access, we talked about this game last year. You were into it a lot. You had played it on PC when it came out, and I was, I just got it on Xbox because they just did their Xbox release of it.
Yes, I actually kickstarted this one.
It's a game by 3D Realms called Rad Rogers. Can you want to explain just really quickly kind of what the game is? Because it is pretty easy to explain.
They tout it as an Apogee-style 2D platformer.
If you've never played Apogee games, because that might be a little old school for you, we're talking about Commander Keen.
Yep.
We're talking about original Duke Nukem.
Yep.
Side scrollers that were action based, not platform based, like Mario. You have a gun, you have a weapon, but it is still kind of side scrolling.
Kind of like a Contra feel to it, or if you remember Jazz Jackrabbit, that's what it reminds me of.
Perfect, Jazz Jackrabbit.
you know, so you go through the world and you gather power ups and things like that. It's real simple. Real cut and dry, kind of like a classic shoot 'em up sort of.
Collect gems, shoot guys.
You have a very tongue in cheek, like funny backpack that you hang out with, and you jump through these different worlds, and it really is not much more complicated than that. But it's a good example of simplicity done well.
Now, you came away from it being a little bit disappointed, mainly because this isn't your kind of genre.
Yeah, correct? Exactly.
You're expecting something a little bit different. This is, you know, like I'll say the same. This is not my genre per se, but I do really love 3D Realms. The people who are there now are not the people that made Duke 3D, I don't think. But I can still get behind anything they make. What was most interesting for me is that this game, when you start, says, are kids playing or are adults playing? Because Rad Rogers is both a very colorful and game that's good for kids, mm-hmm. because you know you're just this little kid. He's got a fun backpack. You're shooting enemies, collecting gems. It's really not that bad. But mm-hmm. if you're on adult mode, you know, they'll say fuck every 5 seconds. There's like blood and gore, mm-hmm. and I love when games give you that option, because I think Rad Rogers isn't a game that adults will like mm-hmm. as much, mm-hmm. because as funny as it is to see the little kid with the, you know, spiky blonde hair be like, fuck these guys, bang, 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 I think the better audience for it is the kids who are going to just like something simplistic. Yeah. So the way that they give you that option, I always like it when games give you that kind of option, especially kids mode versus adults mode.
Right.
Brutal Legend, you know, they let you censor all the swear words. And I played through that game all censored because I think bleep noises are way funnier than Jack Black saying fuck. But that was the thing that stuck out to me. I played about one or maybe a few levels of it. The way they released it on Xbox was called Rad Rogers World 1.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how they released it on PC as
well?
That
is how they released it when it was kickstarted, yeah.
Now, since I was not part of the Kickstarter and this game is not an early access game on Xbox, it is its own release, is there going to be a Rad Rogers World 2? How exactly do you know the progression of this? Or is Rogers World 1 just a way of saying this is the first Rad Rogers game?
I believe the intention is to continue with World 2 and so on and so forth. If I remember, I mean, I still get their emails from their Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And the idea is to release it episodically. You know, so you're going to get a World 2. I don't know if there's going to be
about like 20 bucks
a piece or anything like that. Yeah, it might be a nominal fee for the next round of worlds,
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they're on a good track. Seems like a good development team. It's not my cup of tea, but I enjoyed it for what it was. It looks good. There's a lot of cool mechanics.
Is this on Switch?
I don't believe so.
Okay, because I was trying to remember.
Oh, I just thought of another game I've been playing that I will add.
Well, we can do here. I'm going to do this one real quick, and then if you want to replace it with that, we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
We're just doing some production while we're still on mic. But that was Rad Rogers. So if you have a kid who maybe wants something that's kind of like Super Mario but a little bit of action,
mm-hmm.
there is the game might say M-rated. But there is a mode where they remove all of the suggestionable content. Suggestionable. You know what I'm saying. I just wanted to get that out there. This next game, kind of similar, actually. It's a game that I think would function well for kids. It's a little bit too hard for it, for them, but it's oddly has some swearing in it. This is Immortal Redneck. Immortal Redneck was a game that came out kind of in early access on Steam, I believe, last year. It just got its Xbox One release. PS4 still isn't getting it. But what this game is it's a roguelike first-person shooter. If you've never played... Have you played Rogue Legacy, Kevin?
Oh, yeah.
So in Rogue Legacy, you enter this castle, right? And the castle has four bosses. And generally, you just run around the castle, kind of Castlevania style, killing enemies who drop gold. You get XP, and then when you die, you continue the game as a new character, but you can upgrade your skills with the gold you have earned.
Mm-hmm.
Same exact idea. In Immortal Redneck, you are this redneck who is also a mummy. You have three pyramids that you need to overcome. So instead of one castle, it's three pyramids, each with a different theme. The pyramids have seven levels. You know, you go, you run around, you shoot all the enemies in a room. Then you can go into another room, kind of Binding of Isaac style. You know, mm-hmm, there's mm-hmm. secret rooms with chests. But you go through, and then when you die, you have gold. And then you spend on a very Rogue Legacy-like tree so I can make my attack be better, defense, more health. But in this game, you can also unlock other characters. So different loadouts. So the redneck, he has a pistol, machine gun, and dynamite he can throw. And his active ability is he shoots faster. The guy I beat the game with is Apis, the god of strength, who has a grenade launcher, a minigun, an Uzi, and a pistol. And his active ability is he can go invincible for some time. But there is, I think, 8 or 9 different gods, and it kind of lends you to how you want to play the game. One is more agility-based, uses a sniper and a burst rifle. One can go invisible and it has a grappling hook. So you have all these different ways of playing the game, but generally speaking, the game is always the same. Enter the pyramid, kill as many guys as you can, climb as high as you can, die, restart, be more powerful. There's bosses at the third, at the midpoint of each pyramid, and at the top of each pyramid for a total of 6 bosses. I beat all pyramids in about 18 hours. There is still a little bit of replayability. A lot of fun stuff, but that's what I want to come back to, is that Immortal Redneck is one of those games where it might seem a little bit weird for someone who might not have played a roguelike, but it is one of those games you just pop on for 20 minutes, you have a good time, and if you like it, you like it. The thing that struck out to me, or stuck out to me the most, two things. Like I said, this game is good for kids because there's not a lot of blood. There's no blood, actually.
Yeah.
The enemies you're fighting are these very, very... The art design and the character and enemy design are really great. Awesome. Just, you have, like, little frogs that jump at you. Like I said, the enemies are different as you go into different pyramids and they align with the themes, but tons of different enemies. They're all cartoony, very Looney Tunes. You're shooting with these big kind of cel-shaded guns and stuff like that. There's no blood. The only reason this game is mature is because the redneck voices every single kind of person you can play as, and he'll just say, like, fucking government and stuff for no reason. If they would have removed all the fuckins and, like, maybe half of the shits, then this game would have gotten a teen rating. And I think for kids, or more like preteens, teens who like fast-paced shooters, but parents might not want them blowing people's heads off and stuff, perfect game. It's perfect, but for some reason you have to have the redneck who... Some of the stuff is funny. Some of it falls flat. Like, anytime you enter a pyramid after a death, you have to get rid of all of your gold, right? You can't carry over any gold. You spend it, and then you go in. And, like, one of the first times you spend it, and he goes, oh, what this fucking taxes with these fucking government, man? And I giggle a little bit. But then, you know, sometimes he objectifies some of the women goddesses, and you're like, this is weird. But that was something that stuck out to me. The other thing that stuck out to me is just how fast this game is. If you've played Doom 2016, that was widely regarded as
one of
the...
That's what I was going to ask.
It's faster than that. It is fast in the way that the original Quake is fast.
So it's kind of twitchy.
Very, very twitchy. And not only is it twitchy, but every character besides the Apis God of Strength one has a double jump. Some characters have triple jumps. And eventually these rooms get so big, they're almost areas within themselves, and there is a lot of first-person platforming. And the thing that stuck out to me is that it's great because the clamber mechanic, you know, you hit the side of a ledge, but you didn't get it quite enough, but you can climb over it, is perfect. You can climb over so many things. There's so much leeway. And the amount of auto aim they give you is cool because I like to play with this goddess named Neith, and she has a sniper. And I didn't even know you could scope down with the sniper because the auto aim they give you is so beneficial that you can just no scope 360 anybody. You don't even have to be good at shooting games.
It's fun. Yeah. It's just fun.
It's like you just shoot off without scoping, and it's fun, it's fast, it's a cheap game too, $20. Like I said, it's 18 to 25 hours depending on your skill with shooters, but it's one of those games that just keeps on giving and giving. The only thing I'll say bad about it, besides the, you know, weird amount of cursing from the redneck, is that the game, while the art design is good, the actual quality of the textures can be quite low. It can be quite blurry at times. But every new pyramid and the bosses, all the character designs are evocative. They make you feel like, wow, this is unique. So you can kind of overlook maybe the blurriness of the game. But I highly recommend Immortal Redneck, especially if you like roguelikes like Binding of Isaac, Rogue Legacy, Enter the Gungeon, but you're a fan of first-person shooters. Mm-hmm. It is a marriage of those two genres in a twitchy, Quake retro shooty way that I was just blown away by. I think we might talk about this for Game of the Year.
Damn.
Which I was surprised about. Kevin.
Yes.
That was Immortal Redneck. Kevin, you should definitely play this. I don't know if you...
Yeah, I'm going to have to. Normally, your games download automatically on my Xbox, but this one didn't for some reason.
Double check, but it's just one of those really, really cool games that I was consistently surprised by. And what I will say is that the first pyramid, by the time... It took me 5 hours, I think, to get through it. And when I was done with that pyramid, I said, I need to get to the second pyramid before I really say anything about this game, because if all the pyramids look the same, it's going to be not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, too much of the same thing.
Right.
But then I went from a Egyptian pyramid, which has all the tropes of big pharaohs and stuff, to the second one. And the second one's like some techie futuristic thing, and all the characters are different. It's highly neon. And every new pyramid you get new weapons, new scrolls. So it's a game that keeps on giving content-wise, and I was... super, super happy with. Took me about a week of casual play to beat. But that was Immortal Redneck. Like I said, about $20. Get an Xbox, PC. It might be cheaper on PC. No word on PS4 yet. Kevin.
Yes.
What is this other game you want to talk about?
Celeste.
Oh, shit. Yeah, my little brother's been playing that too. Tell me about Celeste.
I've been playing the hell out of Celeste.
Real quick, PC or Switch?
Switch.
Okay, that's also what Dan's been playing it on. Tell me all about Celeste.
It is the perfect game for Switch. It's a very well-priced indie. It was originally made on the Pico 8 during a, you know how they have those hackathons every once in a while?
Yes.
Where game developers, or in some cases hackers, will try to develop a program or a game in a allotted amount of time. Well,
a game jam or something like that.
Yeah, and so the Pico 8 is some platform developed to be super, super easy to learn how to program. Mm-hmm. And so they developed the concept for this game on that, and then eventually turned it into a full-fledged game.
Nice, dude.
Really simple. You have the hallmark of the Pico 8 is that you can only really have so many inputs. So you have your directional, your D-pad, and then you can only have, I think, two or three more buttons that you can program.
It's highly simplistic as well.
It is incredibly simplistic.
Super Meat Boy level of controls.
Literally, that is how that is almost exactly how this game is, but it's bundled up in this really awesome story about this girl, Madeline, who's climbing a mountain. The story is a little bit more complex than that. They really bury a lot of narrative in the progression of the story. One thing I will admit that they handled well, and this is something that a lot of people are saying, is that they really did a good job of displaying how somebody with anxiety feels. I know that's a weird...
I've heard a lot of, just to clarify, I've heard a lot of parallels being drawn to the level of narrative that Braid had.
Yes.
Braid is a game that when you play it through, just on the surface level, looks like something very basic. But if you read into the story, it's about something infinitely complex, mm-hmm. all symbolic, all metaphorical. And Celeste, I believe, is a game that's similar in its storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And it might be overlooked because the graphics are... I haven't played this game.
The graphics are very, very basic.
Yes. Okay. So I just wanted to put that out there. But and it's pretty.
It is all 2D platforming. But it is some of the most difficult 2D platforming I've ever played in the most rewarding way possible.
That's why I brought up Super Meat Boy.
You know, in the same way that Super Meat Boy, you know, one of the biggest pains in the ass with those sort of games is you die, and then it takes more than a fraction of a second to start over again.
Yeah.
Well, Celeste is seamless. You die, and then moments later, you're back where you started.
That's always
and you
good.
Try it all over again. They have just enough variation in each level to make it really interesting. So, for example, you know, at one point you find a mirror, and the mirror is not what it seems. Your reflection has red eyes and is your opposite in every literal sense of the word. And you notice that your second self comes through the mirror and begins to chase you. So if you make contact with that second self while platforming, you die. So not only do you have to platform, but you have to platform in such a way as to not run back into your previous path.
It's like a shadow,
and
man.
It follows a second behind you. They also have this feature that's really cool. There are these hidden levels called B-sides.
People have compared this to the stars that you can find in Braid.
Yes.
Very difficult collectibles that require thinking outside the box.
And the B-sides themselves, the levels are some of the most challenging platforming I've ever played, and it is infinitely rewarding. One of the cool features is they tell you how many times you died at the end of the level.
Nice.
So I think on one of the B-sides I racked up about 500 deaths.
That sounds about right for a game like that.
It just feels really good. The controls are really tight. Everything's really responsive. The music's fantastic. The narrative is really great. The characters that they've given you, like there's an old man who welcomes you into a hotel, and you know there's a little bit more to this scene than it seems, because he doesn't get many visitors and he really wants to make your visit special.
Insinuating he's gonna mess your shit up.
He doesn't necessarily want you to leave, but that's you know, that's delving a little bit more into the narrative than I wanted to, but just to give you an idea, there is something there. There
it's
is
not just some
deeper.
Like simplistic 2D platformer. Yes. There's substance to the style.
Yes.
How much is it? Like 15? 20?
15, 20 bucks? Yeah, something really cheap.
Guys, small indies
it's
like this.
It's a beautiful game.
And Kevin is not the first person I've heard. Like I said, my little brother played it. He said it was great. I've heard many other people within the industry, other critics saying the same thing. So if you like 2D platformers, and especially ones that are challenging, like Super Meat Boy, etc., definitely check out Celeste.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to hold off on these last
yeah,
two.
Yeah,
no, we were going to talk about them, but since Tyler couldn't make it, it would just be Kevin talking by himself. But what we will do is talk about this next one. Borderlands 2. Hell yeah. Borderlands 2 is a game that Kevin always falls off. I don't want to say where at in the story because some of you might not have played Borderlands 2, and if you haven't, you should. And that's actually the reason why I kind of strong-armed Kevin into playing Borderlands 2 with me. I have a scout who's like a level 20 or something. We just met up with Tiny Tina. Kevin, I just wanted to check in with you. Don't have to talk about this for too long, but Borderlands 2. It's been a while since you played.
Yeah.
What are you enjoying it just as much as you did?
Gearbox makes some of the funniest shit out there.
I think that's what they do the best. You know, quests.
One of my absolute favorite things about Borderlands are the splash cards they put before every boss fight, where they have some pithy little joke that they make. One of my favorite examples is I can't remember his name, but he's from Borderlands 1. He's one of the first bosses you fight, and his name is like two something.
I think I whatever think I remember your
name. The subtext to his character name says he also has three balls. It's just like really irreverent humor like that. That joke totally fell flat because I don't remember the entirety of it.
But there's a style to it.
Yeah, there's just this like really awesome grungy post-apocalyptic crust punk style to it that just makes the game so much fun.
I think it's also important to note that if you haven't played Borderlands, you should at least know about it because mark it here. Once again, episode 101, E3 2018 this year will be Borderlands 3. They will talk about it. It's got to happen at this point. And if it's not this year, it'll be next year. It's not coming out. But Borderlands is a first-person shooter RPG, a loot collection game. A lot of people talk about it like it's Diablo because there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of weapons that you can get. You know, you pick a character, they kind of align with a class, you and three friends, or solo if you want, go out and you go into the Borderlands and you are vault hunters searching for a mysterious vault full of treasure. And that's kind of how the story always goes, but it's a cel-shaded game, a lot of style, a lot of color, and like Kevin said, a lot of humor in the writing. I think they time and time again just absolutely kill it. Gearbox has done a great job. Me and Kevin played for, maybe like a few hours. Mm-hmm. We leveled up 5 or 6 times. Mm-hmm. Kevin, what are you most excited for about this game?
I'm excited to finally beat it, man. I love this game, and every time I start it with somebody else, we all bounce off, and something new comes out, and we go play with the new shiny toy instead of going back to this classic. I also really want to get into the pre-sequel. Because I haven't played that at all.
Pre-sequel's fun.
And all I hear about is how you can play as some of these characters that you've known throughout Borderlands 2 and, like, realistically just sounds like a blast.
Pre-sequel is fun. There's some things that I don't like about it. I think the thing that I like the most is that it was made by 2K Australia, so all of the characters talk an Australian accent, and it's all on the moon. So in my head canon, Australia just moved to the moon. But it's really fun, and I think we should play that one too. But
I think one of the things about Borderlands 2 I'm most excited for is Tiny Tina's Dungeon Adventure.
Yeah, there's these post-release expansions, about 3 or 4 of them. Man. And Tiny Tina's
so much fun.
All about D&D.
I heard Torgs is really good too.
Yeah.
It's just these really big set piece characters that have their own little moments.
It's back in the day because this was originally a 360 title where you would release a full game and then you would release like 3 or 4 expansions, storylines, more quests and stuff like that. Just time and time again, it's a great game to go through. And if for any reason you haven't played Borderlands 2, you can get it on 360, PS3. If you have one of the newer systems, Xbox One, PS4, you can get what's called the Borderlands Handsome Collection, which has everything, all the DLC from Borderlands 2 and the pre-sequel. I highly recommend you play it, but we've been having an absolute blast. You know, I play so many games for work. Oftentimes, I don't really have tons of, like, genuine fun. I look at them from a critical standpoint. I can appreciate them as a piece of art or sometimes not, but very rarely nowadays do I just get amped when I'm playing a game. And playing Borderlands with Kevin, there's just so much explosion, so many crazy things. You know, psychos are running at you, screaming their heads off with suicide vests, and it's just so much crazy action. I had a blast, and I keep messaging Kevin saying, hey, we got to get on and play Borderlands 2. But more often than not, Kevin seems to be playing this next game, which begrudgingly not going to bring up just because I get mad that he plays it instead of Borderlands 2. But Kevin and friend of the show, Josh, have recently gotten back into...
We have been playing The Division.
Tom Clancy's Ghost Recon's...
Wildlands.
Tony Hawk's Wildlands 5. The Division.
Yes.
When did this game originally come out? 2016, right?
Yes.
This is a The Division.
It was like Q4 2016, I think.
It's like a third-person shooter.
Third-person RPG. It's
with
really
some RPG elements, yeah.
Not, I would even argue that it's more RPG than shooter in some ways. Yes, it's shooter in that you have a reticle that you're aiming at other bad guys. But the way the loadouts work, yeah, it's more of a numbers game. It's almost like WoW with guns in a weird way.
Yeah, whereas Borderlands, you can just plug a dude full of shots and they have numbers associated with it. Division is even more in that direction.
Yeah.
The numbers truly do count.
Stat block sort of thing. Mm-hmm. The whole story of The Division is a plague hits New York City right after Black Friday, and it was disseminated through dollar bills that were spent on Black Friday.
It's a really good story. It's a really good one.
And so you play as a character who is part of this elite force that is kind of awoken in the wake of this, that's trying to get a grip on New York City after it has been taken over by rioters and like really crazy like zealous nut jobs that you know.
Imagine if a giant outbreak happened right around the holidays and the kind of people that would come out in the streets and be mad about it.
Yes.
I mean, that's a just think of the worst aspect of the holidays,
yeah,
and the people you think about, that's who you're dealing with in this game.
Yeah, and so one of the reasons I went back is I kept hearing, oh man, The Division's gotten so much better, and
that's,
you know,
important to know.
It's really great. I love a comeback story, so I had to jump on and try it for myself.
Because when The Division originally released, it had an online component, but they were updating it with new expansions,
yeah,
similar to like a Destiny kind of thing.
Yes.
And it started off kind of weak, mm-hmm, and then progressively got better and better,
yep,
with the updates and stuff. And so you guys hopped back into it.
It was kind of plagued with a lot of hackers and things like that
yeah,
make the PvP zone really just untenable. But the things that they've added, most notably like a survival mode where you and some friends play against waves of enemies, which is a lot of fun.
Fun.
Really cool underground mode where narratively they have gotten a handle on a couple different subway cars and they travel to different places in the underground. So like the very first underground mission you do, you're infiltrating this headquarters of these people called the rioters. They're like the people that would go loot and steal from stores to take advantage of the downed infrastructure. And so you go into this underground via train, via subway, and it's this, what was really striking about it was it's all blacklit, it's all neon, there's pumping music. So you're like fighting these guys, you're getting in these really cool gun battles in a rave, essentially. So visually it's like really gripping. It's you know, it's a lot of fun because they've added daily missions and weeklies and things like that. So your classic MMO structure, it's nothing quite out of the ordinary, but it's really enjoyable because it's a break from the usual like fantasy based MMO, I guess. I'm really not much for a realistic or even future sci-fi kind of person. But
you're a fan
of
the comeback story.
I've been enjoying it a lot, actually. So
you know what, Kevin, for as much as Kevin talks about games on this and as much of the facade that Kevin might put on that he has a lot of time to play games, Kevin doesn't have a ton of time to play games. I'm the guy who does nothing but play. So when I see Kevin on more than one day out of like the maybe 2 or 3 days he has a week to play games and he's playing The Division, I mean, you can see why I'd be hurt. I want him to play Borderlands, but there has to be something there. And I've been thinking about getting back into it, but Kevin needs to learn to buy games digitally so I can also play.
Be happy to know that I will more than likely be buying Sea of Thieves digitally.
Hell,
that is coming out in 2 weeks. I'm very excited. I'm also buying the controller, which I'm psyched about.
That controller is super, super sexy. If you haven't seen it.
It's just perfect timing because I need a new one anyway.
Yeah, I bought a controller at the beginning of the year.
I'm not shitting you guys when I say that playing Bow in Monster Hunter has literally made my right trigger on one of my Xbox controllers have so much play in it that I can wiggle it left to right about a quarter of an inch.
Yeah, Monster Hunter is the kind of game that makes you hammer. But that's I'm glad that you brought that up, actually, because as we near the end of this episode, the season premiere, I know it's a little lukewarm, a little bit more content heavy than we normally do. I just want to give you guys a look at what's to come. So we have some games coming out. This is obviously not just all the games that are coming out, but the ones that we will definitely be playing. Kevin mentioned Sea of Thieves. That's going to be middle of this month.
March 20th.
March 15th is Surviving Mars, which is a Xbox, PC, and I believe PS4 kind of survival simulator. You guys land on Mars. You're trying to fend off aliens. I might be playing that. We have A Way Out, which is the Fuck the Oscars guy from Video Game Awards. Remember that? It's a co-op game. You can only play it co-op. You play as a kind of narrative-driven two guys escaping a prison. That'll be towards the end of the month. And then the biannual attempt by Ubisoft to stick their faces into any sort of wild, a crazy kind of political thing is Far Cry 5. This time we're approaching the, I don't even know what it's supposed to be, like a subsect of
it's like
racist. I don't even know what they're going for now.
They're trying to...
It's in America instead of being in some like other
They're trying
country.
To extract like Appalachia, you know, like weird off the grid people and place them in like a South Dakota setting. And then
it's weird.
Then boil them all up, mix them all up with some like weird religion, sort of outlasty kind of cultish stuff.
It's just interesting because Far Cry 3 was you and your friends are in college, you go to this exotic location, and then there's a crazy guy who's like, I have captured all of you, and there's where there is. And Far Cry 4, kind of similar. You go to this place, and there's a crazy guy who's like, hey, I captured you, and I own this area. And then eventually, Far Cry Primal comes out, which is just like a weird primal game where you're crafting. Yeah. And then Far Cry 5, you're expecting them to do it again.
Right.
But like, this time it's America. And the political...
And a guy that's probably played by Jared Leto is capturing you. He's got a big beard and some blue blocker sunglasses and a trucker hat, so you know he's a racist.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see, but that's the end of this month. And then a little bit further down the horizon as we get into April, we have Rick and Morty on PSVR. That's something that's on HTC Vive. That is the 10th. Yakuza 6 finally coming out for PS4. God of War on 420.
I also have not checked into this recently, but last I heard, Bloodstained was supposed to be coming out in March.
Yeah, sometime around then.
But I, for whatever reason, March 18th sticks out in my head, but I don't believe that's a deadline that they stuck to.
Yeah, we'll have to have Tyler back for that one. I think he knows there was some sort of delay.
Bloodstained's the Igavania game that's supposed to be coming out
but
soon.
Yeah, 420, we got double releases. We got God of War for PlayStation exclusive. We got Nintendo Labo, which is your cardboard box kind of crazy stuff. Lima Bean Respect Day. You gotta always remember 420, April 20th, Lima Bean Respect Day. We will also do a 420 episode as always. There's tons of stuff, guys, but we're in the beginning of the year. Of course, E3, they started announcing that. Bethesda put out their sneak preview of what's going on. I'm thinking we might get a Fallout 4 PSVR announcement. It would be cool to see maybe they finally say Skyrim or our Elder Scrolls 6. We'll see. Who knows what we're going to get from Bethesda this year. Lots of fun stuff coming down. Is there anything else? I mean, Monster Hunter was really the game that everyone was looking forward to. Can you say now, do you have another game besides... Well, Sea of Thieves is like your next big one.
Sea of Thieves is going to be the next big move. I personally am excited for Bloodstained. I think that's going to play really well. Really, really excited for the Stardew update.
I'm all about this God of War, man. Let me tell you, Norse mythology, let's go!
You know, if you get that one digitally, I'm going to play the hell out of that game.
I mean, yeah, but it's PS4, so you have to
PS4.
You're
right, you're
you
right,
can come
right.
over and play it, but you have to sleep over. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's important to note,
you know,
though.
The first God of War, here's a little Kevin anecdote. First God of War, I beat it in one night at a Cold Fusion lock-in.
Damn, Cold Fusion, bro. That was the day when you had like these internet cafes around here. I went to Cold Fusion. I think I played in the Halo 2 tournament or something like that. Halo 3. I went to a me and my buddy Zach and a few other friends. We had a Halo 3. I think it was a 2v2s tournament. It was actually in Chardon at a church. So before they did the Halo tournament, these guys sat down and tried to tell us about like the saving power of Christ. And then in the same area where the pews were, you have like a fucking projector of just Space Marines blasting people while the crucifix of Jesus Christ is to its right. It's a surreal experience, but we won, so that was fun. Guys, it's been an interesting 101. Just me and Kevin here. Hopefully we'll have Tyler back next time, maybe the time after that. We'll see how busy he has been. We have tons of things for you guys. We have a few hopeful things that you'll do. So we had to switch over our RSS feed, which means that if you're listening to this now, congratulations. You found the new RSS
feed. You
found
us.
Yeah, it was really weird with the host.
You found Waldo.
But if... I don't know. I mean, the old feed doesn't exist, so there's no way for me to reach out to those subscribers. But if you're listening to this, double check. Make sure you have subscribed to the new feed, especially if you're on iTunes. To that point, all of our old iTunes reviews were lost. We had about 25. We're sitting at a 4.5 star. If you reviewed the show before, I would greatly appreciate it if you'd review it again. Once again, any people who want to review the show, we have our review robot 2K12-3000 who reads your iTunes reviews live on the air. So if you want to put out something funny, you know, whatever you want, our review robot will read it out, as long as it's not racist, sexist, or, you know, something too blue.
We also have a number of games for people who give us reviews.
Yes.
I don't know that they're limited in scope at this point. I know I definitely have a copy of Yooka-Laylee to give away.
Yeah, you said Rocket League.
I think there's a copy of Rocket League. I'm pretty sure I have a copy of Don't Starve Together now floating around there. A lot of decent games that, you know, you may not already own, and it only takes a minute of your time. And honestly, you know, if you really enjoy what we're doing here, share it with a friend, because we're gonna have to rebuild our subscriber base at this point.
Generally speaking, yeah.
Keep an eye out for our Facebook page. We're going to be migrating from a traditional page style to a group.
Yeah, Facebook has done some changes there.
Kind of the move. That way we can get our updates out to you guys. So checking us out on Facebook is really helpful as well.
There's Twitter. You want to reach out to the actual show, because we post, you know, when the new episodes are coming out, when I'm doing my reviews occasionally, that is at SuperGameCast64 on Twitter. Both me and Kevin have personal accounts. Mine is at SGC64 Matt.
And I'm at GingerBeard_man, beer like the beverage.
For me, you're going to see a bunch of different movie reviews, video game reviews, and, you know, wacky 4 a.m. texts, because I'm up all night. Kevin has that good wholesome fun.
For me, yeah, I like to have a little fun with it. I post things that I think are hilarious that probably nobody else will, and I retweet a lot of you know, fun accounts.
We do have a YouTube channel where we've been streaming a little bit more. We do some off color stuff, some stuff in between. We did, like, me and a friend of the show, Zach, played some Little Big Planet 3 together. It's all good time. So if you want to check out the YouTube channel, do that. Also, a 90skid.com. I write for it. Kevin writes for it occasionally. You can check that out. Right now, I believe the site is in migration. So
shout out to all of our Bambino podcaster friends.
Heck yeah, man.
I imagine you guys are probably some of the only ones that are going to be listening to this at this point, because we're going to be broadcasting, our first release thread coming up here soon. So thanks for checking us out.
There are people who are downloading the show still off the new feed. So for all those who have been diligent and found the new feed, thanks once again. And like Kevin said, if you enjoy the show, if you're friends of ours, please do the best you can. We're really asking for your guys as much as you can right now, because we are essentially knocked back to zero.
Yep.
You know, we had this show going
for
10 years. We had the show going for, and yeah, we've accrued subscribers and fans over that. But now with a brand new feed, we need your help in, building that up back to where we were.
If you have somebody you want to shout out to or anything like that, hit us up on Twitter. We'll be happy to read it on the air. Just as kind of a thank you for giving us a little bit of a signal boost. Every little bit helps. So, you know, give us a shout.
Kevin, as always,
mm-hmm.
You have a little game fact for
us
at the end of each episode.
This is a good one. It's apropos that you were talking about Halo 2.
Oh, hell yeah. Okay, so why don't you, just so those who know, Kevin always has a nice topical game fact at the end of each episode, and then we'll sign off. Kevin's had some really good ones over the years. Some really good ones. So I'm hoping that he really brings the fire today. But before we sign off with this game fact, I just once again want to thank people who've downloaded. Welcome to the new season. Hopefully we'll be able to provide you better audio quality, better content, more coverage of different events. We're really pushing forward in 2018, so don't forget to subscribe, and like we said previously, if you can review, etc., we'll be willing to help you out. Talk to us on Facebook, talk to us on Twitter. You can also email us if you want any questions, or if you have anything specific, at sgc64mail@gmail.com. Kevin, give me that spicy game fact.
So, Halo 2.
Yep.
Apparently, the release was delayed after it was discovered that one of the developers hid a picture of his ass somewhere in the game.
To that, I have another game fact. It's not a game fact as much as an Easter egg, but in Halo 3, one of the last levels, you had to have like two or three extra people in your party, but you could do these boost jumps into the secret area in the back, and one of the developers has it's like a cardboard cutout of him dancing back and forth in his underwear. So maybe it's the same developer.
Oh man, he just put on some trousers that time.
Yeah, it was just boxers with like hearts on it, but you can find that. It's absolutely great. So shout out to Bungie. Nice spawn with your ass, Bungie. Guys, you have listened to episode 101 of Super Gamecast 64. And with that, you have gained enough XP to level up. We'll see you next time, guys. Good night. Bye.